Hello and welcome to The Medical Sisterhood, a podcast created in collaboration with HCP Live, dedicated to empowering female physicians by providing a platform for shared experiences, mentorship, and support. I'm your host, Mona Shariari, an assistant clinical professor of dermatology at Yale University and a practicing dermatologist in Connecticut. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming Dr. Jim Del Rosso, a nationally and internationally renowned leader in dermatology, a celebrated educator, and honorary uncle to my new baby girl, Ariana. Jim, yep, such right. A pleasure to have you on with us today.
I am very pleased to be Ariana's uncle and pleased to be here. I actually heard something through the grapevine that I was being invited because of my looks. Is that true? Because of my good looks?
Well, we don't want the other guests to feel like they're at a disadvantage, but between you and I, that definitely played a role.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I feel like I'm being used, right, to my looks. That's terrible, right? Anyway, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation, Mona.
Well, and I have to say, today marks an exciting first for the medical sisterhood because you are our inaugural male guest. And I feel like it was a couple months ago. We were chatting in one of those long hallways at the Wynn in Vegas. And by the time we got to the end of the hallway, the idea for this episode was really born. Now, you and I know each other pretty well, but why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your journey through medicine?
So I started out growing up in Brooklyn, New York. I went to pharmacy school knowing I wanted to become a dermatologist. That was challenging somewhat in the beginning because they weren't taking pharmacists at that time. And I had applied to both DO and MD schools. I was on the waiting list at one MD school that I expected to get into, Georgetown, but it was exorbitantly expensive. Doesn't have any state funding. It's not a state. And it was exorbitantly expensive. And I also was accepted into Ohio University College of Osteopathic Medicine in Athens, Ohio. That was a relatively new school, and it was less than a third of the cost, including room and board. So my parents said, you know, what do you want to do? I said, I don't think it's going to matter where. I think it's going to matter what I do with it. And so I'm happy I went to Ohio. It was a great life. I got to meet some great people. In fact, as far as a female dermatologist, that's how I got to know Wilma Bergfeld very early on, who is obviously a leader, a past president of the American Academy of Dermatology. And a funny story, my third patient I saw in practice when I went back to Athens, Ohio at Ohio University. I was the first dermatologist there. And the third person I walked in to see, look at a chart. We had paper charts, Mona. There were no computers, no EMR. Those were the days. Those were the good days. And I see the name, and I'll say the name. It's Wilma's daughter, Sigrid Bergfeld. I walk in the room. She looks just like Wilma.
Oh my God.
Knew Wilma, but I didn't know the daughter. And it ended up she had a severe case of poison ivy. I'm breaking HIPAA now. I guess I can get in trouble. And I said to her, I said, I know your mother. If I screw up this case, I am going to be banished from Ohio, right? But it all ended up good. Wilma and I spoke on the phone, and we had a great relationship after that. So,
well, and I think that shows how much trust she had in you, just to trust her daughter's care with you. That, I think, is the best recommendation anyone could ever get.
Well, she didn't know me. She showed up at the clinic. I was the only dermatologist. It's a small college town, and I don't think that Wilma chose me. I'm not going to tell myself that she didn't know me, but it really started out being a very good relationship after that. And her daughter, she ended up getting better, and I was happy, right? And so
is
she.
Amazing.
It's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Of course. I know when we last spoke, you start telling me about your father's sister who was very influential for you, not just with respect to your career, but your life. So can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that special relationship?
So if I roll the tape back just a little bit and let you know that I have had several very influential people personally and professionally, men and women. And in my life growing up, before, you know, medicine and dermatology came into view, I had certainly had a lot of men. You can envision Brooklyn, Italian family. You know what that's like. Your husband's Italian. You're sitting around. You know, it's not soft. You know, most mm-hmm. of the, especially the men are pretty loud. But I had some really intelligent people, and as far as what they did in their occupations, they shared certain things and they were very smart. But just their view on how to handle things in life situations. And the little quotes that they would have from my grandfather or whoever, you know, the elder statesman, really stuck with me. But I had several very influential females. I had a mother back at that time who was very well accomplished. A lot of the women didn't go to college. You know, the roles were set up differently, but that didn't mean that what they were doing was less important or setting really good example. The women that I was around, my mother, my grandmother, my aunts, all set very, very good examples. So my mother, she went to college. She got a master's degree in music. She was phenomenal in what she did over many years. So setting by example that the work you do is really how you set the standard, your actions. You could say things, but if you don't back them up, it doesn't mean very much. I had a lot of that. The woman that you're talking about is my father's oldest sister, right? There were two sisters, my Aunt Mary, who was younger, who was a great person. She set the example of just how to treat people and be kind and always be upbeat. She set that example. My Aunt Bella was that way too, but Aunt Bella was an incredibly brilliant woman. She never got married, which was rare at that time amongst many of the women, especially the Italian women, based on cultural issues. And she told me, she called me Jamesy. Okay, you know, please nobody else call me Jamesy. Right? This is reserved for her. She said, you know, I never got married because I never found anybody that I would want to spend all my time with or be that connected to. She was extremely independent. She traveled all over the world. She had a really good job. She always dressed well. But what I really liked about her is when she spoke, she always put a lot of thought into what she was saying, and everything that she said in a conversation or about anything that was going on in the country, money management, issues within the family, was always intelligent and well thought out. And we all knew that. My father would even tell me, not in front of all his brothers, but, you know, your Aunt Bella is the smartest one in this family. And I always went to her and said, you know, Aunt Bella, what do you think? And it was always well thought out and always extremely intelligent. And she lived till she was 93. The last thing she said to us was, when I hit 100, I'm going to have a party and you're all invited. Well, she never made it to that. And Mona, if she would have got to that, we would have invited you. But she set a standard for being intelligent, presenting yourself well, being very, confident in yourself or comfortable in your own skin. And she was extremely feminine in her dress, but she didn't act like I have to be a woman in a man's world, right? She was herself, but she stood out because of how smart she was and how accomplished she was. And you had to respect her. Everybody respected her. So that was a very, very big influence on me. Probably one of the biggest ones was Aunt Bella and my sister. So my parents, you know, we weren't in this family where they're telling my sister, you graduate high school, but it's not important. You go to college or have an education. It was the opposite. My parents told both of us, I want you to both go to school, be smart, be able to take care of yourselves personally in your own, you know, how you handle things in life, your mental status, so to speak, you know, stay, you know, be intelligent. Don't go down the wrong rabbit hole or mm-hmm. corridor, but also to be accomplished in whatever you do. And my sister did. She went on into business school and she ran a law office for several years. And so it didn't matter what the gender was. It mattered who the person was and what they projected, mostly by their actions. And that carried with me throughout my entire career. So I never looked at it in terms of, and certainly there was never issue with color or race. I was told, you treat everybody equally. You look at people, you get to know them over time. the good people you stay connected with. The ones that are not so great, you keep at arm's length or avoid completely if you can, right? And that's the way it was. So it never really mattered to me what somebody's background was, what their gender was. It was more who they were. And when we get into the professional world, obviously, there's got to be a lot of quality to what we do. And it's very challenging. And so I had great examples. It's about setting an example, like you're doing for your daughter right now, right? Mm-hmm. And you both, you and your husband, setting an example. It's setting an example to me that made a difference. And I hope I usually set a good example to my colleagues or to anyone else that interacts with me. But that's what I learned from day one. So I don't always understand some of the biases or perceptions that people have because I didn't experience it. But I am smart enough, for lack of a better term, to know that these things do exist. But they don't exist to me. And I'm not happy to hear that someone doesn't like a certain person because of their background or their gender. That's their problem. And hopefully we could squash it so it stays with them and they learn that that's really not the best way to look at it.
When I think
that's
having,
where it sits.
Well, I think having your father's sister kind of in your life so intimately and just the type of character she was a myth buster, a stereotype breaker, and that really speaks volumes as to her character and the type of person that she was. I would have loved to get to know her because she seemed absolutely incredible.
She was incredible. And going even beyond that, she never married, she never had children, but she was the one that was always there for any of us, any of her nieces and nephews. She was always there in every situation. Aunt Bella was right there. In her community, she helped build a park for children that they named after her in Brooklyn years ago for other people's children, because these were the right things to do. And that's the kind of person she was. I can't say enough. It's hard to describe somebody that means that much without you actually meeting them. But unfortunately, she's not here for you to meet. But
well, and I think you said that. Well, I think what you said that resonated with me is that she may not have had children, but she was there for you guys and really left a lasting impact. And I think sometimes as women, we're pressured to meeting those societal norms that I have to get married, I have to have a child to feel like there's a sense of meaning. But I think nowadays we're becoming more okay with the fact that you choose your own path, you have that impact in any way that you feel is appropriate. And I really feel like the impact that she had on you and your family is going to keep going on for generation after generation, touch the lives of so many people that she couldn't even imagine when she was talking to you
right
all those years ago.
So what you said about those pressures do exist within society. I think there's definite shifting. I mean, just the fact that companies give the fathers a paternity leave, you know, I think that's a great thing because they need to be around, right? So I think those sort of things recognize the importance of both. Because let's face it, Mona, we need a man and a woman for any of us to be here.
Yes.
And even looking at the standpoint from what you're doing with your podcast, which is somewhat like a sorority, and there could be any group that feels like they're sectioned off and they have to create a visibility or a statement. I get that. But in the end, we all need to be included. And even a lot of the women that are successful, there are many, many successful female dermatologists that have been in that position for a while, going way back. Many of them were given opportunities by a male that was in charge because there weren't many women running programs or around. There were fewer of them, fewer Wilma Burkfelds and Lynn Drakes and people like that to be a part of it. But the advances have to be because someone, men, women, both, say, hey, Mona Shariari's really got something. We need to help her, right?
Shit
Brasso has something. We need to help him. And that's such an... So we've all been helped by both men and women along the way.
Well, and I think we've always been taught to fight for a seat at the table because that's what you're looking for. Now, given what a mogul you are in dermatology, as a man in derm, have you ever felt you needed to fight for a seat at the table?
Well, actually, yes. You know, if we're talking about whether it's bias, discrimination, whatever the case may be, I had issues against myself for a long time, not because of the color of my skin, not because of my gender, but because of my degree. So going back many, many years, I faced the challenges when I wanted to get into dermatology, and there were very few DO programs, of rotating. And I did very well on these rotations because I studied a lot. Now, I'm a reasonably smart guy, but I'm never the smartest guy in the room, and I know that, right? And
well, I can beg to differ, but okay.
Well, no. But, you know, I bring certain things to the table, and I obviously have a certain amount of intelligence, but my performance was a lot based on I did a lot of the reading. And a lot of the other students, you know, they showed up, especially in dermatology, vacation rotation, right? Well, it never was. And even the ones that were there and present, I always performed well. And at the end of the rotation, I remember one specifically where there was a department chairman. I liked him. I had been at their facility a few times. I got along well with the residents. He said, Jim, you're as a senior medical student, as good as a first-year resident at the end of their first year. So wow. Thank you very much. That's a great compliment. I really appreciate that. But, and the but was essentially, you know, we're not taking any DOs into our program. So how did I handle that? And I had other colleagues that were DOs saying, that's ridiculous. That's just going. I said, look, they don't owe us anything. Nobody owes you, regardless of degree, gender, whatever, background, anything, right? All I would say was, thank you very much. I appreciate it. They said, I'm happy to write you a letter. Thank you very much. But in my mind was, I keep going. Eventually, I'll get a place at the table. And it happens over time because, you know, you just keep working at it. You do good work. And more people see that. Nobody can take away your knowledge and your work. And you can't change the minds of people that do have a bias in their own head. They may not be able to do it publicly, but in their own head, we can't stop individual biases. So I put that aside and said, you know what? I'm not going to be angry or confrontational with these people. I'm just going to keep showing up. And eventually, I was at the table. I remember years ago, I received a letter from somebody very prominent that was on the American Academy of Dermatology Board of Directors. They wanted me to run for the board, right? I got a letter. Would I throw my name in to be considered for nomination? I wrote
very prestigious.
Well, that was a very nice invitation. But at that time, DOs were not allowed to run for the board. So I wrote back and I said, Dr. So-and-so, you know, somebody that we both know who's in your state, by the way, state of Connecticut, right? That gives people some hint. I said, I really appreciate the invitation, but if you look at the bylaws, and this is a board member, the AAD bylaws, now granted, they're so long, they're not going to know every line, I'm not eligible. And they were shocked. I said, well, you know, that's just the way it is right now. Maybe it'll change at some point. And it did. And I eventually did serve on the board. But I'll point out, Mona, in that particular vote, I turned out to be fifth. There were four board members, and I turned out to be fifth in terms of the voting ranking. I was beat out by four other women, okay? Four women to get on the board. Great people. We know them all. I had friends saying, oh, Jim, that's not fair. They all vote in a block amongst them. I said, stop, stop, stop. Everybody there is thought of as being qualified. They won the vote. That's it. Well, it turned out they needed somebody to fill in for 2 years because one person had to go off of the board. And so they called me and I took the position to fill in for 2 years. So I was the player to be named later behind the four great female players. But you know what? It's fine. You eventually get there if you keep working at it. But if you allow yourself to be filled up with anger, you can have feelings about certain things and let that drive you. You're going down the wrong street.
Well, I remember you once told me we can't control how others behave or feel, but we can control how we react. And that's what I love. It's that perseverance. And it didn't matter how people treated you. You said, you know what? This is what I want. I'm qualified and I will keep trucking through. And that's an incredible message.
Thank you very much. Right. And you can't control everything in life, but you can control your outfit. That's also very
Well, along those lines, because we're coming to the end of our time together, the key question, I know if I couldn't be a dermatologist, I'd be a fashion designer. So my question for you is, what gives Dr. Del Rosso his daily fashion inspiration?
So, you know, the only one I know in my family, according to my father, because from the time I was growing up, very little, I drove my parents crazy in terms of what I was wearing. I can't remember far enough back, but I probably said, only Gucci and Dolce and Gabbana diapers, right? Whatever. But from the moment I was aware of it, I drove my parents crazy. And my father told me, he had a brother who died before I was old enough to remember him, that always had the best outfits, the best shoes. You know, he didn't have any money because he spent it all. Fortunately, I'm not in that situation. But he said, I think you got Uncle Johnny's gene. So hopefully I did get his gene. But I'm following Aunt Bella as number one. So I think the message is, and I get it, you know, you want to encourage women. I want to encourage women and help the ones that I can see really deserve it and could use that help, right? And that's also true of the men. And that's in the residency. I had a residency for 5 years here in dermatology. In the history of dermatology, I am the only residency director of a dermatology residency in the state of Nevada in history. So if you're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and they ask that question, you just say Dr. James Del Rosso, because that's the only residency, formal residency we've ever had in this entire state. And I was I had three women and two men in the practices, different backgrounds, one Indian male from India, one Indian female who was actually of Muslim heritage, a white guy in town that was a brilliant guy and had been an attorney that applied, and two women that were born in Korea but were raised in the United States. So they didn't have any accent, but very strong Korean heritage. I didn't care where they were from, right? They were the best, and it was a pleasure having all of them. And you see me at meetings, Mona. I always sneak away from the boring table with Mark Lebball and Daryl Regal and David Pariser and even some of the women under there. And I always migrate over the table where you are, Ali Gallant, Linda Steingold, you know, where all the women are hanging out, because you're a lot more fun.
Well, I have to say, I think of myself as a fashionista, but you have me beat, especially at Fall Clinical. Your suit was way nicer than what I had on.
Well, that's because you're investing your money into children, and I'm way past that stage. When you get to my age, you're going to go all out on you, and you always look great. But I appreciate the opportunity, and I just think it's important to help people that really show that they deserve to be helped. I don't care anything else about them, where they're from, what their color is, what their race is. We need the best people. And every group has some great people. And Diane Tibbetot in Acne was a big influence. She was sitting at the table with Jim Layden, John Strauss, Alan Chalita, Guy Webster. I was eventually invited into that group. I was honored. And Diane was there. Diane wasn't sitting there trying to take an attitude like, why am I the only woman there? She was there because she was smart and damn good. And that's what I want to see.
And I think a great take-home message is that to create opportunities for those people who deserve it, just give someone a chance. If they blow you out of the water, great. And if they don't, then you move on to the next person.
And really, and you don't want to be the kind of person, at least I don't want to be the kind of person, that's not wanting to bring on board someone who may be smarter than me or better than me in certain areas. You want to surround yourself with the best. You don't want to be threatened because I still want to look better than so-and-so, or I don't want to share this piece of knowledge with so-and-so. We have colleagues that do that. I don't understand it. But, you know, that's me. This is me speaking for myself. And I believe you're the same way.
You know? Yeah, I actually had a mentor of mine telling me the day you think you know everything is the day you should retire. So just keep on learning and keep on assuming somebody can teach you something because that's the only way you're going to grow.
I mean, there are days now where I'm driving in thinking, I don't think I'm going to be that sharp today. I hope that somebody that doesn't have anything more than papules and pustules on their face or warts or something easily recognizable, don't come in to see me today because I'm not going to get it today. And then other days you're sharper, but the longer you go on, you depend more on your sense that something's different about the patient. You may not know exactly what it is, like the year or two and you're out of your residency. And then as you're further away from it, it's harder to keep up on all the details. Right?
Absolutely.
Right?
But thank you, Jim, so much. Do you have any last message for our listeners before we wrap up?
I think in dermatology, we are so fortunate. Even our worst day with our biggest problem, they're not problems, they're situations that we need to manage. You have a problem if you get a call that you have cancer or some serious issue, or a call that someone you love or is close to or a close friend has a health issue. The only health issues, I should say this, my father said one thing, and I'll leave it with this. Aunt Bella concurred, right? They both said the same thing. If you have your health, you have no problems other than the ones you make for yourself. Because if you have all these problems, oh, I'm dealing with the CRO, with research, or, you know, I got to do this, I got to do that, or there's a water leak, right? Those are problems. As soon as you find out there's a serious health issue, that's the only problem you have. Everything else disappears. So it's not always easy to do, but I really try to keep that perspective. That's what keeps my sanity at this point.
I love that. Those are amazing words to end on. Now, to our listeners, we're so grateful to have you as part of the Medical Sisterhood community and appreciate you tuning in today. Until next time.
Do I get a little lapel pin or something or a t-shirt?
Yeah, we can get you some swag. But until next time, stay strong, inspired, and keep pushing those boundaries because together we can accomplish anything.
That's right. Exactly. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.